insurance companies have notoriously poor NPS scores. That will have to move in the direction of, you know, what customers expect from other consumer companies, right? So the experiences that they do have to line up at the end of the day.
Welcome to the Insurance Innovators Unscripted, the show dedicated to innovation in the insurance industry. Each episode, you'll get a dose of thought leadership from the industry's top business minds, influencers, innovators, and executive leaders. If you want to transform your corner of the industry and exchange innovative ideas, you need to subscribe to this podcast. Now here's your host, Abel Travis.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to the Insurance Innovators Unscripted podcast dedicated to the topic of insurance innovation. Now, you know, I'm really excited about the lineup of guests that we have coming this quarter to the podcast, and that ranges from Jap DeVries, the Vice President of Innovation for FM Global, Jay Weintraub, the CEO of InsurTech Connect, Saeed Amidi, the Chief Executive Officer of Plug and Play. You know, we have the leaders of innovation from Travelers that's going to be joining us, and we're also going to be diving deep into topics like cyber in insurance and then also blockchain and what the use is going to be and the use cases for insurance. So, you know, I'm really excited to be able to share all of these different things, the thought leadership from the people that are coming to the podcast and also the topics that we're going to be discussing in order to help you really understand what that means for our industry from an innovation perspective. So, you know, first and foremost, I do want to recognize the sponsor of this episode of the podcast, and that is Vortex Legal. Innovation in the insurance field is exciting, and Vortex Legal is a unique and proven solution to help improve a company's loss ratio by substantially reducing legal expenses. Their nationwide network of local attorneys attend the voluminous and routine and predictable hearings for a flat rate, not an hourly rate. So Vortex Legal's solution works with both staff counsel offices as well as outside law firms. They've saved many carriers millions of dollars. So if you want to learn more, just contact Jonathan Broder at 954-473-2648 or visit vortexlegal.com. Now, today I want to welcome Karn Saroya. Now, Karn is the Chief Executive Officer of Cover, a mobile insurance brokerage that makes getting insurance as easy as taking a picture of what you want to insure. Hey, Karn, you know, it's great to have you on the podcast today. Welcome.
Abel, thank you so much for hosting me. I appreciate it.
Oh, no problem. You know, so Karn, you know, just talk to me about yourself and your experience within insurance and then why you decided to co-found Cover.
Sure. So I guess I can start off by telling you a bit about what Cover is. We're a mobile-only insurance application where folks take pictures and videos of things they want to insure. We capture a bunch of underwriting information in the background programmatically, and we make a market for those risks. And by and large, people take pictures of their, the belongings in their homes. They give us 360 views of their cars, pets, jewelry, electronics, just about anything you can think of, folks have taken a picture of. And then to augment that, what we do is we build tools into our apps that are useful to our customers, irrespective of whether they buy insurance from us right away or not. So they can set up price drop alerts on Cover against their existing policies. They can extract or unlock insurance policies on their credit cards. They can use our computer vision tools to document their property in case they need to make claims. So that's Cover. I can jump into, my background, ahead of working on Cover. Prior to Cover, I built, along with my current co-founders, a mobile e-commerce marketplace called StyleKick. We grew that, to about 1 million users, many million page views per month. And we were acqui-hired into Shopify, where we ran a mobile product team together. We're not insurance people, at least the core founders were not. Outside of my experience at Oliver Wyman and their FS practice, it really came down to us trying to figure out what we wanted to do next. We understood that we built really, really beautiful products. Everything that we've ever built has been featured by Apple or Google. We knew that we had an intimate understanding of how to drive distribution on mobile, having driven millions of apps or downloads through our apps in the past. And so we knew that the next business that we built would be in mobile. We just wanted to make sure the unit economics would work this time around. And so insurance is one of those rare spaces where tech entrepreneurs like myself can take a look at it, and effectively we see consumer scale or the potential for consumer scale and SaaS economics. And so it was attractive to us as an industry. the way that we actually went about assessing or demand validating whether something like cover would be necessary is we ran a very quick hackathon. We were running hackathons every weekend. We built all sorts of things, lottery apps. We built ticketing apps. Ultimately, you know, cover was just an experiment where we built a very simple prototype on iOS, you know, handful of views with no user authentication whatsoever. Just the preamble, you know, that indicated to a customer that they should be taking pictures or videos of things they want to insure. And lo and behold, you know, we saw racehorses, we saw speedboats, we saw tree houses, we saw, you know, kittens, we saw cars, we saw homes. And that really violated our expectations in and around, you know, what people would try to insure, you know, via consumer mobile product. And so we doubled down, we applied to Y Combinator, and have since grown into a national brokerage working with, you know, just about every non-captive insurance market in the country.
You know, so Karn, you mentioned a few things that I really want to dig into. You know, I guess the first thing that I'd like to dig into is you mentioned that with your app, you have the ability to unlock insurance policies on consumers' credit cards. So I know a lot of credit cards that offer the ability to get insurance for things like, you know, travel or, you know, whatever it may be. And I know they don't have access to that or really a great understanding of what's being provided to them. You know, so I guess my first question would be around that feature. You know, how has that feature been received in the market?
Yeah, so it's really twofold. I mean, the vast majority of folks who come into cover and use this feature use it right off the bat. It's neat. I mean, it's a little bit of a qualifier for folks that are coming in through cover with respect to what segment they ultimately fall into, whether the preferred, standard, or non-standard market. But that's a secondary thing. And what's really cool is that, you know, what we can do is take a look at your credit card and provide you with the insurance policies that are on that card or some value for downloading an app without having to buy insurance. And that's really, you know, I think an absolutely necessary piece of the puzzle when it comes to mobile. Very few people are going to download mobile insurance apps exclusively just to transact on insurance. There really needs to be some additional or incremental value that's provided by the product that you know, they have downloaded. And, you know, the feature itself was actually, you know, it originated from a piece of customer feedback. You know, a customer had indicated to us or told us a story about, you know, them dropping their iPhone in a lake and not knowing initially that they were covered by the Amex Platinum, but eventually figuring it out, you know, poking through the booklet, the insurance booklet that's associated with the card, and ultimately having to go through a 2 or 3 month process to get, you know, the damages on their phone covered off. And we figured, hey, why don't, like, if people are performing these behaviors anyways, and they have this value that they should have access to, why not just make it really easy for them to do so? And so what you should see eventually with this particular feature is, you know, you should be able to walk into a Hertz or an Avis, and we will, you know, send you a notification indicating that, hey, you've got a collision damage waiver. You should be able to walk into an airport, let you know you got travel accident, flight delay, lost luggage. You know, as soon as you buy something that's associated with that credit card, we'll let you know that, hey, you have extended warranty coverage, etc. So it's really, you know, getting ahead of, you know, the event or the trigger that's going to result in the use of this stuff. And I think mobile is an exceptionally good platform for that.
You know, so thinking about mobile, you know, what I've seen so far in the insurtech space, you know, there's quite a few entrants that are entering mobile. You know, so for cover, why enter a space that, and I don't want to say it's already, you know, very crowded, but it's a space that is becoming somewhat crowded from a mobile perspective. You know, from your vantage point, you know, what's the competitive advantage for using your platform over another?
There are structural advantages to building out a native mobile experience. No one is going to download 8 different insurance apps to get an insurance quote, especially if they're visiting the App Store or Google Play. Structurally, we're advantaged in that, you know, we can act as a potentially a market leader on mobile as a marketplace for risk. And that's kind of what's driven it for us. I mean, it's a convenient tool without having to download 8 different insurance apps. And then we also do things that are well outside the purview of what traditional insurance brokers or insurance companies can do. I mean, we employ computer vision technology throughout our app, to automatically detect and identify property appended to your homeowners and renters policies. No insurance company is going to conduct price drop alerts against itself. Very few insurance companies or brokers are calibrated to communicate with their customers in the way that we do, which is exclusively over SMS or in-app messaging, which allows us to multi-thread conversations, but also allows the customer to control the pace, of the insurance closing process. So, nothing is built in a vacuum and nothing is static. We're very, very responsive to the way, to the ways that our customers want to interact with us, but also, the products that they're asking for and the product flows that they're responsive to. This is just, us using our learnings from being, really good at building consumer product for a long time and very quickly iterating on our value prop and making sure that we're useful in somebody's pocket. And believe it or not, there are a very finite set of people who can do that. And I would say that's especially true in insurance.
Yeah, absolutely. So Karin, I just want to talk about something else that you mentioned. You talked about the capability to take pictures of things that the policyholders want to insure. So you gave the example of, I think you said a horse and, other things, So I guess my question for you is, with your platform, are you guys enabling the ability to insure individual items as well as, let's say, an entire home, or, how does that work?
So we don't do individual policies on low value items. We will issue personal articles floaters on high value items individually. The vast majority of folks who come in through our apps are asking for traditional products. So this is auto, home, renters, with the long tail being pet health insurance, jewelry, electronics, so specialty products. And then, in electronics, if you dive a little bit deeper, it's really just cameras, phones, laptops, the odd drone, we've got Braille machines, things like that. But we handle those on a one-off basis. They're certainly not the foundational pieces for our business. I mean, 70% of our volume is still traditional PNC. If we don't see a strong indicator of demand for a particular thing, we don't build it. Which is why, when we build these computer vision tools on top of TensorFlow, and they're used to identify and catalog things, those pieces of property are actually appended to an existing homeowner's policy or renter's policy. Or if you don't have one, we'll sell you one, right? Rather than issuing an individual policy for each item, it just gets messy.
I do think that makes a lot of sense. As I thought about what you were saying in terms of like how you all are offering coverages, I really think about the millennial segment, who are very mobile savvy when it comes to just doing and requiring things to be done very quickly, in terms of utilizing mobile. So I actually see that potentially, and I'm not sure if this is the case, but, a lot of your target users probably fit within the millennial segment. Now, I know that there are a lot of incumbent carriers that are also doing everything in their power to try to capture that segment and do things a little bit differently in order to enable that mobile capability for those carriers. So I guess my question for you would be, if a company like, let's say, a Travelers or a Liberty Mutual came in a very similar space to yours, knowing that they're, very large and they have, multi-billions behind them, how would you effectively compete with those carriers?
Yeah. So first of all, every insurance company has been trying to figure out how to attract millennials and especially professional millennials for some time. If you look at Chubb, they're desperately trying to figure it out. Most of these carriers, at least on the non-captive side, have their hands tied because of channel conflict. Millennials simply will not transact via the channels that most independent agents you know, can provide. And that's like pick up a phone and talk to somebody who's been in the business for 25 years. You know, if you know, say Travelers, and I don't think they do this, you know, were to put together a direct to consumer, you know, offering exclusively on mobile, they'd be strategically disadvantaged. I mean, they're a preferred carrier. They focus in on a narrow part of this narrow part of the market. You know, they're not going to be able to provide a view of, you know, everything that is available, and certainly wouldn't be pricing, you know, for millennials specifically. So I'm harping back to my original point. You know, I think no one is going to download a Travelers app, a Liberty Mutual app, a Geico app, a Progressive app, an Allstate app, a Hartford app, you know, individually to get an insurance quote. I think that there is space for a marketplace for risk, maybe space for two, that can dominate the native mobile segment. It just structurally does not make sense, you know, for them to invest, given that, you know, they tend to focus on a narrow set of risks and are not intending to serve the broader market.
Yeah, you know, I actually I think that's absolutely the case where those organizations are. So I think at this point, you know, they are very steeped in, you know, what they do well, right? And that's to serve, you know, whether it's the personal lines or the commercial space or whatever it may be, and try to continue to serve that well in order to preserve their market share.
Yeah, I mean, they have a very loyal set of independent agents who, you know, have built up relationships with a good chunk of their book, and they need to be cognizant of that. And I mean, as a result of this channel conflict, I mean, they have, you know, not had to deal with or work with sophisticated, you know, distribution channels, or folks who are working in, you know, channels that require some degree of technical sophistication. And so most carriers don't have simple things like payments or pricing APIs. It's very hard for me to believe that they're going to be able to spin up, you know, a consumer implementation of computer vision or a elegant front end to even get something like a renter's. It's just, I just don't think it's their core competency. I just don't think they're technology companies.
Yeah, you know, I definitely agree with that. You know, so just thinking about what you're saying, and you know, we talked about you all providing coverage, let's say in the personal space, and I think that you know, in terms of innovation, I think it's easier to innovate a commoditized line like personal, but you guys also insure commercial. You know, as I was reading about what you all are doing, so do you mind delving a little bit into you know, what you guys are doing in the commercial space, and then let's say up to what types of limits you all are providing?
Sure. So I'm in the camp. I mean, a lot of insurtechs are monoline. I mean, they do renters, they do home, some do auto only. I think it's important for us, if we want to continue as a going concern and be a viable, you know, insurance technology company, at the end of the day, to be multi-line. That being said, we don't really place a very strong emphasis on our commercial business. I mean, we're appointed to sell commercial business, but we only do it when we have preferred customers who are also business owners that would like to move, you know, that business over to us as well. So it's very much on a white glove basis, and it's very much a knock-on effect of us having a set of customers who tilt towards preferred and standard. And so it's not something that we are pressing down on. I think what we're really good at is building out consumer facing experiences, and we may turn our attention to consumer, you know, fully. But that's not our intention as it stands. And it's, you're right. I mean, Abel, you said that personal lines is a bit more commoditized, a bit more straightforward than commercial. I actually tend to agree with you on that. I mean, you know, a lot of these things are much more complex risks that have a bigger, you know, advisory component to them. And I think we'd only really move into commercial when we're comfortable that, you know, we could provide a 10x experience over top of what exists today. And largely what exists today, even on the insurance, the insurtech side with commercial entities, is I have a simple set of web forms. I collect information. Those things are stamped into a court form. They hit an underwriter who will take a couple days or a week to get back to me. And the customer is, you know, customer generally speaking is wondering why it's taking so long. Until we can figure out what the structure is to solve some of those particular problems, or to capture underwriting information in a cleaner, more programmatic way that helps us to assess that risk, I don't think we would move in right off the bat. I think that we have enough on our plate with personal lines.
So knowing that you have enough on your plate with personal lines, you know, I look at the insurance piece in terms of what you guys are doing, and I see that as somewhat primary. But in essence, as I start to pull apart your platform and your offering, I actually look at the technology as something that that's really valuable in terms of what you all are offering. You know, so to me, you know, you all feel like, you know, really a technology company that has an insurance component that, you know, that's somewhat secondary to the technology. You know, so I guess my question for you is, you know, if you found an opportunity to innovate in another industry and leveraging at least some parts of the foundation of the technology that you guys have already designed, you know, would you take the opportunity to also innovate in a different industry as well as continue to work within insurance?
I think focus is important. And so you're right. Like, I mean, a lot of the tools that we build internally now are intended to paper over or smooth over the inefficiencies or poor design of existing technology or systems in place with InsurTechs. And those may be more broadly applicable, you know, to other verticals, most likely in the financial services sector or the lending sector. But, you know, I'm wary of moving the target a bit. I think what we really need to do is figure out, hey, how do we deliver exceptional experiences on the personal lines side, make sure that we're adequately growing our book, and you know, we're making our customers really happy, and then we can move on from there. But that being said, there's a lot of stuff on the back end that we could easily productize. And I'm a big proponent of, you know, companies like Amazon, who took, you know, their infrastructure and productized that into AWS. They took their effectively their CRM or their voice tools and turned them to Amazon, Amazon Connect, AWS and Amazon Connect. They took their logistics business and they turned that into Fulfilled by Amazon. None of that stuff really, you know, needed to live on Amazon exclusively. And what that did was, you know, by productizing each of these individual components, there's a forcing function now in place to continuously improve them, right? Because they turned them from cost centers to profit centers. So I'm a big proponent of that. I think that that's something that we'll consider, you know, at scale, and to make sure that we are continuously improving, you know, all back office and back end functions as we grow. I think it's really important. But for now, you know, insurance, in terms of a vertical approach, insurance is what we're focused on. Insurance is what we build product and tools to support.
Yeah, you know, so just as you mentioned Amazon, and I think about, you know, what Amazon has done over time, right? From when they started as an online bookseller, you know, to all of the different channels of diversification that they've done now, up to date with AWS, with the distribution and everything else that goes along with that. You know, so I start to think about, you know, what some of the other companies just in general are doing, you know. So I think about what you all have done with mobile, and then that connects me to, you know, a company like Apple, where, you know, it just in general, we know mobile is hot right now, and there's a lot of organizations that are trying to leverage all of the capabilities that mobile has to provide. You know, just a couple of months ago though, I recently read about Apple stating that, you know, mobile is starting to, you know, become a smaller part of revenue over time. You know, so that's part of the reason why I ask about the diversification. So from your perspective, you know, if mobile continues to become, let's say, a smaller part of revenue for some of these companies long term, and the focus starts to shift away from it, you know, what's your plan, you know, to diversify beyond just being mobile first?
So I think, you know, I don't think mobile itself is shrinking. I think, you know, maybe it is reaching a point where everybody has a device in hand, and the specific hardware piece, you know, may be decelerating somewhat, but it's still growing. I think especially native mobile experiences and the investments in technology they've made in and around computer vision, in and around security and privacy, that platform is certainly, like, you know, still a core focus and will continue to be a core focus for Apple and other, you know, mobile hardware, mobile software providers. That's not something that's going to change. And, you know, to your question of whether we would consider you know, diversifying our distribution. I mean, we own cover.com, and so we may move to pushing some of the functionality that's available in app. Largely, it'll probably be policy management or at least origination for, you know, a certain set of lines to mobile web. But mobile web and native mobile will be the primary driving forces for us, unless you know, we decide to move in the direction of packaging up access to our markets, making them available via a simple API, and allowing anybody who's technically sophisticated to distribute for us. But that's some way off. That requires quite a bit of buy-in from carrier partners. But for now, it's mobile web or native mobile.
You know, so you just mentioned the quite a few things, but you also mentioned the carrier partners. If you don't mind, can you quickly delve into, how you all are partnering with some of these carrier partners and what that means for your platform?
Yeah, sure. So we're directly appointed for the most part, or we have an indirect relationship that allows us to get access as a sub-producer. From the perspective of a insurance carrier partner, we either are treated like a typical retail brokerage, which is the easiest thing, honestly, for them to digest, or we are treated as a potential platform partner, whereas, you know, we are given access to a variety of APIs that are not typically available to retail brokerages. And so we would directly integrate via through Rate Call 2 potentially. That's the nature of it. I mean, very few carriers actually do have the ability or robust enough APIs for us to be able to partner with, but that's not a requirement to work with us. We're happy to build software internally that patches that over and makes it still acceptable experience for our customers on the front end.
Yeah, you know, so Karn, you know, as I'm talking to you, I feel that you all really understand the process around what it takes to innovate within the insurance space, you know, using your technology expertise, but then also partnering and pairing that with your insurance expertise, and then, you know, also leveraging your partners to assist in, you know, really getting an understanding of what those needs are. As I read about what you all are doing, and as, you know, you and I just talked about here about some of the things that you've been pulling together, you know, it just really feels like you guys are really on the verge of really doing some huge things in this industry. You know, so I just wonder, you know, within Cover, how do you all innovate and what process do you take to really innovate and introduce new things into the market?
Yeah, so we're pretty, we're still a fairly small, nimble team. We're advantaged in that at least the founding team has been working together for, 5 years building consumer products. So we know what to look for when we want to double down on particular features. We know that we have a pretty streamlined process when it comes to demand validating particular things. We simply do not invest engineering resources in things that do not move business objectives or satisfy customer requests. And that as a baseline for an early stage company is super important. I think as you grow and as you scale, that sometimes that messaging and that rigor can get lost. But we do our best to ensure that there's a sniff test that's applied to anything and everything that could change the consumer facing product or introduce complexity on the back end, and we make sure that from a cost benefit point of view, we're in line. If it's a more strategic decision, we tend to take a little bit more time with it. And those strategic decisions tend to pertain more to business decisions than they do technology ones. Before we started Cover, one of the mechanisms that I used to decide whether we should even build this particular business was I started talking about the concept with a set of peers that I thought, it could potentially resonate with, and a set of peers that I didn't think it would resonate with. And I continued to have that conversation over and over again over the course of the next 2 or 3 months. And really the decision criteria for me was, at the end of that 3 months, was I still excited about this idea? Did I still think that this would be viable? Did I still think that folks would, would find this to be useful and to be a step up from what exists? And the answer for Cover was yes, in the general sense. But a lot of that methodology and like the way that we try to convince ourselves of particular things still moves over to Cover now that we're an actual national insurance brokerage.
Yeah, so you mentioned that you all are at the early stage, at this point, or somewhat of an early stage company. And by the way, I do want to say congratulations. I did read that you guys, raised an $11 million pre-seed or seed in Series A round of funding. I'm just wondering, as I see what you all are doing, as I see sort of that want to innovate in this industry, what's your plans to, continue to grow Cover with the round that you all just raised?
Yeah. So, I mean, to be fair, we a couple of 6 months ago, it was just myself and my co-founders. And I think one employee working out of our house in San Francisco. Right. And now we've got two offices, one in San Francisco and two actual offices, one in San Francisco and one in Toronto. So I think one of the mistakes, if I'm being objective about myself, in building out a team, is we probably started hiring way too late. And so we are aggressively hiring for, specific roles that are critical to the business. So growth related. We're onboarding insurance DNA. We're building out a sales organization. So things that are critical to the success of a venture scale or venture business as it intends to scale. So the team will certainly grow as we grow our top line. We are becoming more interested, and I'm alluding to the conversation earlier about moving, some of our functionality to mobile web. So a little bit more, channel agnostic. We've just introduced an Android app that is not yet at feature parity with iOS, but we'll soon get there. And then knocking down additional markets and additional, insurance partners that we think that we can easily integrate with and we can provide value to. So it's a simple business from my perspective, at least, while we are a distribution business. We just have to do the block and tackle stuff right. We just got to make sure that we're continuing to build consumer product that people care about, providing delightful experiences and having the team to be able to support that.
Yeah, I actually think that's a great vision for the future of Cover, especially since you're really focusing on the consumer. One of the things that I always see is a lot of carriers don't really focus much on the consumer. They're focused on, very internal.
Yeah, it's weird. I mean, it's an artifact of most folks in the non-captive space really just pushing off responsibility to the independent agent channel. And so they do really weird things, right? like the block and tackle stuff is terrible. Like it's, for example, agents should not be chasing down folks to finalize e-signatures. That should just be a simple product process. And most insurance carriers haven't got that figured out. They shouldn't be the ones that are chased down for ID cards. They shouldn't be the ones that have to explain why a particular carrier will only accept full pay rather than a monthly payment. And so, yes, I mean, really what it is simply, the carriers themselves have never had to deal with the customer. And as such, have pushed it to the agent and left it to the agent to obfuscate some of the, less customer-centric behaviors that they exhibit, right? So it's they're going to learn. I mean, they will have to if they will continue as going concerns, and they'll especially have to learn if they're going to be dealing with folks who are acquiring at a broader scale or building products that are far better than their own.
Yeah, and you mentioned the customer piece in terms of the requirements, and customer requirements are changing. I love the fact that, again, you all are focused on the customer and providing that better long-term customer experience, which I think is going to go a long way in our space. So just thinking about, your vision for Cover, And then aligning it with the vision of the insurance industry. You know, what do you see for the future of insurance?
So I like to characterize. So this business is pretty simple. I mean, customers give us premium dollars. At the end of the day, they make claims, and something less than the dollar they gave us goes back into their pocket. The rest of it's made up of expenses, costs of, you know, adjudicating claims, other operational overhead. I think that a lot of the carriers are, and you know, they'll fight tooth and nail on this, but they're going to have to become much leaner than what they are currently. They're going to have to explore, you know, other distribution channels where younger folks, millennials, professional millennials along the spectrum are transacting, and that's just going to have to be a competency that they build. Or, you know, they work with folks like us to get it done. It has to move in the direction of much more seamless, especially if we're working on a commoditized product effectively. And then on the flip side, I mean, claim servicing and customer service, insurance companies have notoriously poor NPS scores. And so that will have to move in the direction of, you know, what customers expect from other consumer companies, right? So whether they're technology companies, which is most likely going to be the thing that they interact with the most, the experiences that they do have to line up at the end of the day. And, you know, whether that's going to be, you know, forcibly injected into the DNA of existing insurance carriers, or whether they'll evolve over time remains to be seen, but they're going to have to do it fast. You know, they've got to make their customers happier. They've got to have less onerous, expense structures. They've got to be a little easier to deal with when it comes to doing simple things like getting a price out or e-signature flow done or ID cards. This stuff is block and tackle, but for a technology company, trivial. And they have to start seeing these things as trivial.
Hey, you know, so Karan, one of the things that I always like to ask, you know, innovators like yourself, for people that are listening, in order to make this really tangible for them, is, you know, if I was someone at my desk just listening to the conversation that you and I are having here today, and, you know, I'm in the insurance industry, you know, what would your recommendation be for that person to just do things differently, think differently about their jobs, and also to be a little bit more innovative in terms of what they're doing?
You know, I think you need to start thinking about the way things should be ideally, and realizing that any barriers between where you are at present and what the ideal set of circumstances is are purely artificial. And if you can think it up, it will eventually happen. So if you don't do it, someone else will. And I think that's really like the way, that's the mental framework that I apply. You know, we take a look at what the workflow looks like, what the customer experience looks like at present, and then we abstract away all of, you know, the frictions and all of the pain points that our customers have to endure, and decide, hey, what is the cleanest way to possibly do this? What is the thing that is going to delight the customer? And realize that, again, this is not rocket science. It is very well within the realm of possibility. And so for incumbent insurance companies, it's harder because they're larger organizations. You know, the decision-making is often made by folks who don't really understand technology or technology companies. And so that's a challenge. But in a general sense, in a vertical agnostic sense, I mean, for folks who are aspiring entrepreneurs or aspiring to do better or be better within their vertical, you have to realize that a lot of the issues that come up in the day-to-day meetings, a lot of that stuff, trivial. A lot of it, artificial. That stuff can be solved and will be solved and should be solved, and perhaps you're the right person to do it. That's how I think about it.
Absolutely. You know, so Karan, you know, I do want to say thank you for the time that you've taken here to talk to me, you know, about Cover, and then also just about your thoughts around the industry and innovation in our industry. You know, so if our listeners wanted to either understand more about Cover or get in contact with you, you know, what can I do to get them in contact with you?
Sure. So you can just email me directly. I'm Karn, K-A-R-N, at cover.com. Or you can send me a tweet or a direct message on Twitter. It's Karn, K-A-R-N, Saroya, S-A-R, OYA, so at Karn Saroya. And that's it.
All right. Well, once again, Karn, I do want to say thank you. I definitely appreciate your time. And, you know, I'm looking forward to all of the great things that you all are continuing to do with Cover.
All right. Thanks so much for time. Appreciate it.
Hey, everybody. You know, I do want to say thank you once again for tuning into this episode of the Insurance Innovators Unscripted podcast. Now, I do want to let you know, I just want to ask you to do something. You know, if you're getting anything out of this podcast, I just want to ask that you share it on your social media in order for us to continue to provide value to others in the insurance industry that might get something out of what we're talking about here. So tune in on the next episode where I am speaking to Jap DeVries, the Vice President of Innovation for FM Global. See you next week.